Hello, everybody. This is Ground Zero Growth. I'm your host, Sam Sapp, owner of Lockbot. I'm joined today with my guest, Pat Phelan, owner of Leap Company and published author. How are you doing today, Pat?
Doing well. Thanks for having me on, Sam.
So I'm probably going to dive into the book sooner rather than later, more because it's going to be the basis for at least some of my questions here. Tell me a little bit about the book and kind of what you've been working on currently.
Yeah, so the book I wrote, a couple of years ago, actually, it was during COVID. I had one of these aha Jerry Maguire type manuscript moments while thinking a lot and thinking, boy, I've went through a lot over my years as an entrepreneur and wanted to share some of those stories with other budding entrepreneurs or people that are going through their own challenges in business. And if I could pass on some information that I went through, some learning lessons that would help somebody else. That was really the genesis of it. I also want to leave a legacy for my family. My own girls probably didn't know what I went through as a business owner, as an entrepreneur. So I wanted to have something documented for when I'm not around at some point later on, that it has a lot of these stories in it. So that was the other purpose behind it.
Gotcha. And the book's Leaping Forward for anybody on audio
Leaping
only.
forward, yeah, and it's a lot of short stories and just learning lessons of different things that I went through over the past 18 years of owning Leap. Leap was a company that I purchased, wasn't called Leap at the time, and have had to pivot many different times. And we are who we are today. We're a provider of restaurant furniture and case goods, all across the country to different brands.
You know, it's kind of interesting. Something I was thinking, you talk about reading the book and reflecting and kind of an aha moment. It just reminded me of the other night I was having a moment of almost how valuable it would be for me to journal, potentially in a book writing style, the things I'm learning as I'm learning them. Because one of the biggest struggles I think I've noticed as in the pursuit of a dream is we don't know what we don't know. And what's even worse is we don't know what the person next to us doesn't know. Like we might have some key insight, but half the battle is just asking the right questions, knowing what to ask, and knowing how to answer, right?
Yeah, it is. Sometimes being naive is a good thing, though, too. So you don't know what you don't know. So you go forward. And there are many things that I did that I never would have probably done if I would have known the real outcome. But, and there's a chapter in the book, it's about connecting the dots and all those things that you went through personally or through business that you may have failed at. Those actually create the future success. So, yes and no. Yeah, I mean, I probably wouldn't be here today if I knew everything when I started. And so me being naive and just pushing through just out of pure grit, has made me the person that I am and where the company is.
It's funny, that seems to be kind of a recurring theme lately of the folks I'm interviewing is almost that naivety and passion gets the leap. And then, so let's talk about that. We're going to use the term leap a lot because it's fantastic and also very
Yeah.
appropriate. So your, I guess we should kind of start with what was your original dream? And we kind of, I like to wind it back to almost high school level because I feel like there's this flawed notion to the point about leaping that we have to have all the answers. You have to know who you're going to be before you go off to college.
Yeah, I don't know if I really ever knew what I wanted to do or be. I mean, way back then, I wanted to be a professional golfer, and that dream ended pretty quick when I decided not to play college golf. I probably wasn't good enough to play college golf. Went to the University of Missouri, still had no idea what I wanted to do, just having a good time being a college student, quite honestly. Marketing major, didn't know what I was going to do with that. I really struggled out of college, probably for the first 6 or 7 years, different jobs, and just didn't understand where my value was with those jobs, and didn't understand why I was unhappy with these jobs. It was one of those moments like, this is what the real world is like, and felt like Groundhog Day a lot every single day. And I job hopped a lot. I've gone through this before, and I won't count now, but I probably had 7 or 8 different jobs until I ended up purchasing the company that is now Leap Hospitality. Drove my wife crazy because I was never content. Well, here's what I found out after I decided to buy this company back in 2006. The entire time I was made to do what I'm doing, and I never recognized that because stuck in corporate America, you have a certain task, you have a job, but there really isn't the ability to be creative and to build something from scratch and be your own boss and own it and be able to dictate what you want to do. And when I got into this, although it wasn't easy either, that's when I felt fulfilled. I wasn't fulfilled at all. And I wasn't a person that was going to go 30 years and pull the paycheck and look back and say, well, that was a fulfilling life. It just wasn't me. But I didn't know that until I had to go through all the bullshit th until I bought the company.
That's an interesting thing because I've called it like a glove I was always meant to wear. And then until I put it on, it was like, you didn't know. So,
Now it's also interesting too, if you go back to kind of, and I touch on this in the book, I did a lot of self-reflection when I bought this or when I wrote the book itself. I look back at some of the stuff that happened through my childhood, which probably created who I am today. Parents got a divorce right as I went into high school. My dad was laid off from a job that he had for many years, right at the exact same time, changed our family trajectory quite a bit. I had to grow up really, really quick at that moment. And I watched my dad then decide he was going to be an entrepreneur, never was before, and start his own company. He was in the insurance business, and watched him grind. Gosh, I remember sitting in an apartment that he had, and my brother and I were folding pamphlets to then he could mail out to prospective clients. And we were involved in that process and how cool that was, then saw the success he had. And then right out of college, another transitionary time in my life, he passed away unexpectedly. And that was another time of, oh boy, life is changing. And the grit that it took for me to, as a person that was trying to define his life, my life kind of started over again. And having some of those big moments at these big times of your life, I mean, starting high school is a big, tough time for anybody. And having your parents go through a divorce at that exact same time, and then transitioning from college to the real world, and having somebody that was very impactful in my life pass away. Pushed me to say I have to grow up really, really fast, and I'm going to own myself versus somebody kind of dictating what I'm going to do. I think those two moments really kind of created who I am today. If I really look back and bad moments in life that create a positive. And I think that's a lot of what a lot of people do. And part of the title of this book was intentional. I think many people in life look back at those moments and they carry that baggage and they have regret and they're just holding on too much. And I, for some reason, Sam, have always been okay, let's go forward. Let's go forward. I don't think about yesterday all that much. And my memory isn't really good sometimes because of that. I'm just thinking about tomorrow. And the good and bad of that is you don't reflect back on the good things, but you also forget about the bad things. And I have amnesia. Business amnesia, I have it all the time. But as an entrepreneur, you have to have it if you're going to be successful, in my opinion.
No, I think that's key. It's easy to stay positive through that when you have business amnesia. I like how you put that. Well, kind of tell me about the is there ever time when it's kind of bit you in the butt, business amnesia? Because you said sometimes you forget the bad things. Is there ever a time when you maybe retried something you'd tried before? That Or have you always
Yeah,
been
I
pretty
mean,
good at
I
learning the hard lessons?
at the early stages of the business, I was still trying to define the business model. So when I bought the company, we were a supplier of restaurant, what they call back of the house equipment. So stainless steel tables, cooking equipment, things of that nature. And I knew nothing about any of this stuff when I bought it, by the way. And I was trying to redefine the company because when I got into it within the first 6 months of that, holy cow, what did I do to myself? And so I was trying different things to kind of pivot, I guess, that first pivot. At that time, I wanted to own and operate restaurants. That was something that I thought I'd have some passion for. So first step in that is use other people's money to do it, the old OPM. And that's a model for entrepreneurs, developers, restaurateurs. And I was fairly successful, raised some money from people that had high net worth and developed some restaurant concepts in the Midwest. They all failed. And I say failed, meaning they never really made any money. And I ran around like a chicken, like a head cut off, trying to make these things work, and it just wasn't working. And I had business partners and all these ventures, and all I was doing was pleasing them and not pleasing myself. And then fast forward, I started a recruiting company, and that was really successful. And part of the success was an individual that I hired that I then made a business partner. And I thought, why did I do that when I knew that having business partners has a lot of baggage? And I probably wasn't the best person. I just knew my personality. A business partner wasn't meant for me, and I just saw all the baggage that went with it, and I just did it again. And I'm like, why wouldn't I have learned the lesson that I had literally 7 or 8 years ago, that some of the issues that we had was because I had a business partner and I couldn't do certain things. And now I'm having to, in a lot of ways, you have to answer to somebody else when you have a business partner. You can't just go. It kind of brings you back a little bit, 2 steps back. And I did it 8 years later, and I don't know why I did it. And I wish I would have learned that lesson the first time I went through it.
Right. No, I understand. And it's I mean, we've talked about this a little bit. I had a partner in the past, and frankly, it's been enough time that sometimes there are moments where it's like, maybe I need somebody that I'm answering to. Maybe it'll help me move faster or slower or more, but I guess there's a good argument to be made that, there's a difference between mentors and coaches and business partners to some end
Yeah.
too, right?
Yeah,
You
I
could
mean,
still
a
have
business,
somebody to answer to.
yeah. And I talk about that in the book as well. Joining some type of organization, having a mentor, having a group of people that act as your board of directors to give you guidance, big proponent of all those things. But a business partner is basically like being in a marriage, and you're going to have to concede a lot. And now you're joined at the hip too. Probably more complicated than a marriage, quite honestly. And people get involved in these things in a very flippant way. We've all done it. And I think sometimes it's an insecurity because you feel like someone else either knows more than you do, has better connections than you think you do, has more money than you do. So you have all this leverage and power that kind of comes with having a business partner that, if you really think about it, if that's the case, it's probably, if it's not on equal ground, it's a bad way to start what you would call a partnership, when one person may have some power, whether it's the connections, the money, all these different things. You're now starting a business in the back seat, in my opinion, versus just having some confidence and do it yourself and take the risk. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting that most people go into it doing those type of things, and probably they regret it a lot. And then they look back, boy, even it, it's kind of weird with partners. If it doesn't work, it doesn't go real well. If it goes really well, it doesn't go real well. And if it's just goes okay, it goes real well. Well, no one's in it to just be okay. And if it goes real well, people get greedy. If it doesn't
Mm-hmm.
go well, people start pointing fingers. That's a partnership.
Right. Yeah. I like to for people that don't know what the joke that I have is, well, are you married? How's that? Is one enough? And if they're
Yeah.
not married, then it's kind of like, okay, well, tell me about that. You're not married. It's like
Yeah, why?
you want to start one now and in this
That's
capacity.
right. That's right. Exactly.
So I want to talk about, so you said at some point you had to identify a pivot, and I'd love to really dive into that. And that word I think is key. In the 5 years I've been doing business now, it seems like I've already seen people that and it's tough, but it's like you want to tell them, it's like you need to pivot. Like it could not be more obvious from the outside. And I want to help you figure this out. Like I want to, but obviously you can't push them. So I guess kind of tell me about that first pivot, how that went. And I'd really like to get into kind of the mental space that forces or identifies a pivot.
Yeah, so we just kind of talked a little bit about, I bought this company. We were involved in back of the house restaurant equipment. We also were a supplier of ice machines and margarita machines.
Which, sorry, we didn't go into detail yet. What is Leap Company doing? What's kind of your target audience?
Yeah, right now, talked about it just briefly. We supply furniture and case goods to the hospitality restaurant industry. Growing what we call chains or evolving companies that are opening at least 10 units a year total and are scaling. And most of our clients are corporate growth clients. So in the restaurant world, you have franchisor or just wholly owned corporate stores. So almost 90% of our business right now is all corporately driven concepts and concepts that are publicly traded to entrepreneurs that have multiple brands. A lot of us is just trying to find the right relationships and where they see the value of the stuff that we provide. We've got all the connections for restaurant furniture all across the world, quite honestly. If somebody sells a restaurant chair, distributes or makes it, we know who they are. We vetted a lot of the stuff through our own mistakes over the past 18 years. So, and we buy at a very good rate. And then we're highly connected with a couple key manufacturers that white label for us as well. So we kind of built that business model through building relationships and clients that would help us kind of go forward and have used our projects over the years to develop more business. But that all spun out of pivoting. We're kind of going back to the original question. The reason I was trying to pivot because the business model didn't work or it didn't fulfill me. We were a rep organization representing other manufacturers selling restaurant equipment to dealers in the Midwest. But it's kind of ironic, Sam. I got into owning my own company to be my own boss, but I just slipped right into working for other manufacturers and they were telling me what I needed to do every day. They'd bring in their company rep and I'd have to get them in a car and showcase their product. That would be the first week. Then the next week, another manufacturer come in. We'd do the same dog and pony stuff. And we would get commission if these dealers would sell this product. But I'd get on sales plans with them. And I just basically create another job for myself. And I was trying to get out of doing that or doing something that I love. So I decided I was going to get into developing restaurants and restaurant brands. And be a part of that and build a restaurant group. But when what I have found when you pivot, you can't abandon the original business model because it's generating cash flow. So, from a financial perspective, somehow you've got to hold on to what you're originally doing, especially if it's providing cash and paying the bills while you're building something else on the side and you're testing it to see if it'll work. So it will stretch you thin. You got to be real careful. And I think that's really important as to why we've evolved with success over time. Well, we'll get to a couple other pivots that I've had, but I've never gone full in on something because I want to make sure it worked. And I didn't want to sacrifice what we already had going on because it paid the bills, paid the salaries of the employees, and it maybe paid down debt that I had as well at the same time. So I was real careful about that. But I found out the first pivot didn't work. I didn't borrow other people's money. Other people invested. I was the managing member. So I was doing the grind and making sure that these things were making money. And I found out how hard the restaurant world really is and was not successful in it at all. But while we were doing that, we were making cold calls, still trying to find new clients. And I kind of fell into this furniture thing. It's really bizarre how I did. I made the right cold call to a client that we still have today. And I had no idea what I was pitching when I made the phone call. It's crazy. I just was smiling and dialing and looked at this group was building this big entertainment district here in Kansas City and just made a phone call to their head office in Baltimore. And a gentleman called me back like 2 weeks later after I left a voicemail, and he asked what I did, and he did most of the talking. I don't even know what I told him, quite honestly, what we did. I was a consultant in restaurants, or so I don't even know what I said. So then he said, "Well, could you help with furniture?" I said, "I could do that for sure." Yeah. He said, "Well, the two main guys are going to be in Kansas City next week. I want you to meet them, and we'll see if what you do is what we need." Okay. Then I thought, shit, now what am I going to do? We talked a little bit about before we got on this call about the fake it till you make it type of thing, and the difference between a con artist and a hustler. And this was me being a hustler. And the difference, I think we both agreed on this before we started the podcast, is a hustler is doing a fake it till you make it a little bit, and they have a dream of what they want to envision. A con artist probably has the same thing, but has no plan and no follow through. And they're just looking into the next thing, said, "I got your money, I'm moving on." Where a hustler is, they still have intent to follow through. They may not have it all figured on the back end, but they have the confidence that they will. And even if they don't, it's kind of interesting. I've had things where I've screwed up, but I still do what I say I'm gonna do, even though it didn't work and it's cost me money to do it. I think that's a real difference between a con man, I hate using that word, and a hustler.
Do you have a better word? 'Cause I agree that it's not quite the word I wanted either. Like snake oil salesman came to my
Yeah,
mind,
maybe
or a
snake oil
liar,
salesman,
but it,
right?
yeah, for me too, it's I don't know, 'cause it's tricky. It's such a fine
Right.
line in some cases that I almost feel like, I've been next to one of those individuals, and honestly, they were relatable to some end because even in their case, they had intent to follow through. They just stacked the odds against themselves to the point to where it was like, dude, anybody on the outside could have seen that it was impossible to make happen.
Yeah, and I think those type of people, you can peg them pretty quick on who they are. I think they're really, really good salespeople, but they don't have the infrastructure behind them to be a project manager or the follow through. They're just doing deals. Where a hustler, a true hustler, an entrepreneur is doing that, but then they're doing all the work behind the scenes. A snake oil salesman is just selling and moving on, and they really, their personality, they aren't able to pull it off, right? But they seem real glib and like, holy shit, that guy's really polished. He must be, but you got to be very, very careful who you're dealing with when you get in those situations. And there's a lot of those people out there, a ton, that are aspiring entrepreneurs that are great salesmen. But I mean, there's so much more to being an entrepreneur, as you well know. There's running finances, payroll, taxes, being an IT guy sometimes, being a psychiatrist with your employees, all these different things. And it's the guy that wakes up every single day at the same time, comes in at the same time and grinds through it. And they're working sometimes till 1 in the morning and putting their all into it. And I would say anybody that's looking to hire a company that's kind of built by an entrepreneur, they probably should look at how involved is this person. Depending on the probably at what point are they in their journey. A 20, 25-year-old company, they probably are proven. But if it's more of a startup, I'd be really careful with that because there's a lot of startups that are probably trying to be started by snake oil salesmen in a lot of cases that I've seen. But kind of going back to then the pivot. I make the pitch. I remember go to Kinko's, which I don't even know if Kinko's is around anymore, but creating a fake brochure saying this is what I did based on what he said they needed. The pitch, waited, 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 nothing. Made a phone call as a follow-up, maybe 2 weeks later. Said, yeah, they really liked you. You were just too polished. They want somebody that could kick around a little bit. I'm like, no, I can be that guy. I can be that guy. I can be kicked around. So they gave me a couple restaurants they're doing in Kansas City at the time. I put together a budget, seemed to be price competitive, had no clue what I was doing, but figured it out on the back end. And they saw I was in there doing the install myself. I was grinding hard.
When you
And
say kicked around, before we go too much further, I want to
yeah.
clarify, are you talking specifically about price, or are you talking about, they too polished, is they wanted to put some demands on you?
Yeah, I think I think they wanted to dictate the relationship and put demands on me and tell me how they want it done versus I think they thought I
Okay.
was bigger than what I was,
Well,
right?
no,
So
and
I
I
put
like
this
this too
presentation of this
because
huge company and I thought that would be important to them. No, they actually, A, to their credit, I think they want to support entrepreneur-based companies. And B, they want to deal with the owner direct and not me come and sell. And guess what? Now I've got Peggy back at the office who's going to be a rep and I'm just going to do another deal. There's always aspects. They want to make sure I was involved in it, whatever I did,
Gotcha.
that I'm the direct contact and we're small enough because they know that dealing with a small company, you're going to get the owner and you're going to get a different, I think your things are going to be handled differently when you're working with the owner versus a large corporation,
Okay, so
right?
they
So
want scrappy. That's my that's
they
the
want
word that
scrap.
comes
Yeah,
to my
scrappy is
mind.
good. That's a good word
Yeah.
for it for sure. Yeah, they want a
Okay.
scrappy individual, and I was
Cool.
Mr. Scrappy.
And you said
Hey,
that's me.
I should have been. I should be scrappy hospitality versus sleep. I like that because that's kind of what hustling is to me. It's being real scrappy and just figuring stuff out on the back end. So they give me a shot. And that shot really redefined our company. What I did was worked really hard over the next 2 or 3 years to understand the business, understand the supply chain, understanding what they needed and how then could I use that for other clients. And they have a lot of high profile projects. So using that to my advantage to then build a company from it. I mean, that's basically what I did. And it worked. And I put other people in business because of it, in our supply chain and have built the relationships. And I think a big thing is just trust and have an empathy. And it was tight in a lot of cases from a money standpoint. There were times when the business was going well. And then we went to like a 2 or 3 year dip that we were having a real hard time because their project pace slowed and I was all them. And I realized I've got to really branch out and find some other clients. So I've scaled up and scaled down. At one point we had 3 or 4 employees. Then it went back down to myself and I was working on my home and I was miserable doing that. And I told my wife that I need to go find an office because I can't do this. She goes, you're crazy. You should just work out of your office and do your deal. Like that didn't fulfill me either. So I went and found a little office in Liberty. It's staring at a wall all day long forces you to do something, right? I could be at the house and find other things to do, but I had to be in this little closet and say, no, I'm going to do this. And then started a side company, a recruiting company. I bought a franchise, thinking I needed a different side, a bolt on that brought other revenue besides the furnishings. And the furnishing side was just really slow at the time. So literally I bought this franchise and started that company in the same closet, the same office while I'm selling furnishings. And that was cold calling people, trying to find jobs that they needed recruiters to help fill with candidates. That's basically the genesis of recruiting. And lo and behold, when I bought this franchise, literally 2 months later, the furnishings thing just blew up. And I didn't know this pipeline was building behind the scenes, but it took me probably 12 or 14 months to build the pipeline. And I got impatient. And that's why I started this other bolt-on company while I had it. And I'm like, oh crap, I'm only one guy. I've hustled, I've been scrappy. And now be careful what you ask for because I had all this business, but I can't do it all. So I looked to hire another recruiter to run that side of the business. Then I added an employee or two in the furnishings thing. And then now I had a two-headed monster for about 10 years. And kind of the rest is history at that point. That recruiting side, that bolt-on really helped me from a cash flow perspective because it was really, really good margins. Hired the right guy to help drive that business. And we did really well together for about 10 years. And now that business has moved on. We talked a little bit about partnerships. And sometimes things can be really good and partnerships go bad. And that's kind of what happened there. Greed kind of came into play with the other individual. And I think the age difference between us and or myself and him played an impact based on risk level. He was in his early 30s. I'm in my late 40s, early 50s, and our risk levels weren't aligned. So I think that started kind of the breakup. And fundamentally, there's some animosity maybe on both sides of that relationship, but ultimately I reconciled and said it was a good run. And just like everybody says, all good things come to an end at some point. We had a really, really good run for 10 years, and it really helped build the financial element that we needed for Leap to grow. And now after we had that breakup, I held on to the brand, and now we're just all in on furnishings and case goods. And it's kind of funny now, we're so focused, it's made us a better company versus we were probably spread a little too thin. People said, you're doing furniture, case goods, and recruiting. That seems like an odd combination. And it was a really odd combination. I sold to the fact that I'm just a crazy entrepreneur with crazy ideas, and we're doing stuff. We have different divisions, if you will, even though our company was only 10 people, we had, which is stupid that you have multiple divisions with 10 people, but people buy into that. Now that we're more focused and dialed into what we're doing, I think we're a better company because it really spread me thin trying to manage two companies at once that were doing, from a gross profit standpoint, the same type of volume.
Well, it's so interesting. This is perfect for the next question I'd kind of outlined, or the next topic I want to talk on, because you're talking about, and there's different things we can go into here, but you're talking about how you initially kind of start with a pivot kind of as you're doing the other thing, but it's not really a true pivot. It's kind of interesting because the way you described it, and this is what I want to talk into, because a lot of the mentors and coaches, and I think kind of part of this whole thing is if we listen to a echo chamber, we'll come to the opinion that there's one way to do it. You can't throw spaghetti at the wall. You gotta riches are in the niches. You gotta find your superpower and zero in on that. But you're describing a world where it's like you started, if you had just zeroed in and doubled down on back of the shop, kitchenware. I think you were talking about like kitchen sinks and stuff like that, and how it was struggling. It might have failed epically. You had to bring on this hospitality thing, and then you also kind of needed this recruiting arm that helped fund both sides. It was in itself successful, and now you're kind of niching down, so to speak. So
I
I
would say
guess.
I've, it's funny in all those aspects. And I had a business coach early on that it was very similar to an organization that I belong to now called EO. And he told me something as I went through my decision-making process on things that I found out about myself. is I'm fairly analytical. The data drives everything, and all these decisions were based on, am I gaining enough gross profit to do ultimately what I want to do? And if the answer was no, I had to find something else. So the kitchen equipment, the gross margins were horrible. I mean, horrible. And I should have known that after I analyzed the business, which I kind of did, but I got a little cocky and said, well, I've been in business development. I can grow business. I've done that before. Didn't understand the industry and the deep connections and stuff. To me, to break into that, to grow it was, I mean, it was next to impossible. And even if I did, Sam, it would have taken me 20 or 30 years. That was too long. So that really, each pivot was driven based on, some of it was the lifestyle I want. I had a vision about what my lifestyle and the type of business I want to run. And then the other was purely just gross margin. And is there enough profit here where I can make the living I want to make, but also have a staff that can support me? And if the answer is yes, then you go for it. If it's not, then you abort. You don't abort too soon if you need that gross profit to make your next pivot. Does that make sense? It's like, don't cut your hand off.
Yeah, and how you're phrasing it too isn't what I'm gathering here is it's not spaghetti at the wall. It's an A/B test. We've got this thing here, and it's funding us in one way or another, but then we're kind of testing something else, but we're testing it with a clear definition of success, right? And that's the
That's
gross
right.
profit. And we're
That's
testing
right.
it enough, right, to where we're not within margin of error. Like we found it, and it's not
And I
a
yeah, for
one-off.
sure. And then, why am I on first things? One, the gross margins are better. Number two, I enjoy it. I really do enjoy it. And number three, I found out in our industry, it's very fragmented. There isn't a power player. It's a lot of small mom and pops, and a lot of small mom and pops that may not have the business acumen that I feel like I have. And some of the things I learned through all these jobs I had before I started my own business, I was a financial analyst doing spreadsheets. I was a marketing guy. I was a business development guy. So I'm pretty well rounded when it comes to all that stuff. And so I can go toe to toe when we're talking to the CEOs of these companies where I would say a lot of our competitors don't have that. They're small companies that may know how to make a booth, but they really don't understand business and the value add that you're trying to provide some of our clients. So, and be able to go into a boardroom or a manufacturing facility and be able to drive that and talk to a blue collar worker or to a CEO. It's a unique gift that I think we have, that I feel like I have. But I saw that gap in what we do, so I probably got lucky a little bit that that gap wasn't being filled at that time, and we could sell at a competitive rate because I had to test that too. So I knew what margin we need to make on the products that we sold. Now I had to test and see did would the market bear that? Was I competitive with other people? And we would kind of make calls, we would put together bids or proposals, and I found out pretty quickly the margin I needed was, and we are competitive, which is really important. Plus, we added additional service and value that they weren't getting. So I was at par with the competition, but our service is way better. That probably is the big magic to, as to why we're at where
There was a particular
we're at.
point where you had mentioned a 2 to 3 year stint, I think before kind of the recruiting side of things, maybe when you were even in a solo space, where things were bleak financially. That's a long stint. I mean, had you had some success before this to kind of have energized you, or I mean, kind of walk us through what plows somebody through that? Because that's another thing I talk to people on, that they're smack dab maybe in the middle of that stint. And what's worse is, they, from what I can tell, it's not worth pivoting. So how do you
I
tell them
think
to?
that's where that I think that's where that business amnesia comes through, because I have a hard time remembering some of that stuff and it's buried. But if I really look back, we had to live off my wife's salary for many years. We knew that when I decided to take the risk, we could live off of what she was making, but it was going to be tight. So we made that fundamental decision before I went and bought this business. What I didn't realize was how stressful and how tight it would be. And it was tight on the business end, on the personal end. That adds a lot of stress, right? And I remember having some panic attacks, some anxiety, at that point. Two little girls under the age of five. And I think, I don't know if I got this into the book or not. At one point, I had pretty much given up on this deal and I was putting my own resume out and interviewing for jobs. Had a couple job offers that would have paid me a lot more, and did a gut check and said, okay, so the reason I left was because I hated corporate America. I wasn't a good fit for it, but yet I'm going to go back just because I felt like I need to provide for my family, right? And my wife was supportive either way. I think she just wanted me to be happy. And I, for some reason, I just said, F it, I'm going to keep going and see how far I can take this. And I do remember they always say, write things down. And I think I still have this. I read down here, and it was all financial for me. I've got to put two girls through college in the next 10 years. They're going to need cars in 8 years. I would like a different house in the next 5 years. And literally, I have all this written down, and I printed it off and framed it. And guess what? Check, 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 check. All these things happened within 5 years of me. That drove the fear of not being able to do that drove me to the success. My back was completely against the wall. Without that, I don't think I'd be at where I'm at today, just the fear of it. Talking to other aspiring entrepreneurs, I think they try to tip their toe into things. I'll try to do this, try to do that. You've got to go all in on something like this. And if you're not all in, I don't, it's not going to work. Or you got to have somebody else that's all in and you're just an investor in it. That can work. But ultimately, I really do feel like you've got to have your back against the wall and you really will find out what you're made of. And magic starts happening at that point. You're shaking your head like,
No, I
yep.
mean, I could, it's so I think, I've met and talked to other people that have like almost started a thing while they're working a thing to then transition to a thing. I knew a guy, I mean, an odd set of circumstances, but he had like a, 10, 15 person firm before he went full time on that firm. And so, I think it's definitely clear to me that it can be done, but heck, if I couldn't do it, because I had done exactly what you talked about, dip my toe into, I'm going to play with this, I'm going to play with that. But at the
Hard
end
to
of the
do,
day,
isn't it?
well, and I came home exhausted, and I spent, and in the initial, it's fun, right? You spend about 5, 10, 20, 30, 40 hours getting the whole thing done. And then once you realize that it's going to take about 2,000 more of that, you're like, oh, well, and then people are looking at me like, hey, Sam, what happened to that thing you were doing? And I'm like, well, I'm just passing fancy like all the rest of them. But the moment I went full time into it, into something I knew, yeah, it was a whole different thing. And to your point
You
about
kind of
the
it's like
back against the wall.
you can't be an effective tightrope person in the circus if you've always got a net underneath you, right? I mean, are you really that good if you've got a net? No, you got to pull the net. You got to pull the net.
And it's such an interesting thing too, because for me, I remember a very distinct moment in where, the first couple months after after the one thing failed, moving into the next thing, I was just sitting around all day playing video games, just loafing around. And I remember a moment when my wife kind of peeks in And I'm not going to get this word for word, but it basically was something along the lines of, you're going to get up off your butt and go at this thing, or are you going to go back to a 9 to 5? And that was actually what I needed to then, because you got to mentally, and I think you could pull it off, circumstances or not, because my back was against the wall then. But I didn't mentally have myself in that position until it was like, okay, no, I'm going to give it a good college try, and I'm going to have a deadline or a period of time and where I'm going to stop if this thing doesn't work. I want to hit on though, because you talked about something that resonated with me as well. I remember a period, and I'm kind of motioning an upward graph into a downward spiral, where and then up again. And I remember talking to my wife when we made that initial leap. I was like, you know, hey, this is how it's going to go. It's going to be a downward spiral. I mean, there's no way it can't be, right? I mean, the math just isn't there. And then it'll start to taper off, and then it'll pick up, and then, you know, life's good. And I remember saying that, and it made sense to her, and it made sense to me, and we were on the same page, and logically it all makes sense, right? But then when you're in that valley, logic kind of goes out the window a little bit, doesn't it? Because there's this emotional strain that's, at least for me, heavier than what you ever would have thought it would be. I mean, you knew it would be difficult, but, you know, and kind of jumping back into the 2 to 3 year stint.
It's kind of funny too. I feel like because I had some sales background, one of my first jobs out of college, well, it was in college, an internship. I worked for the Muscular Dystrophy Association. And my internship was to cold call companies in central Missouri, or owners of companies, and convince them to take time out of their day, and we're going to jail them up and they're going to raise money for the MDA. That was my job. And I was really good at it. I didn't realize I was good at it. I didn't, one, I had no fear of calling anybody. I mean, literally, imagine today if you got a call and say, I need 2 hours of your time to go to jail and call for a charity that maybe you don't even know much about or you have a whole lot of passion about, and convincing people to say yes. I'll do that. That was a huge foundational moment for me. And what it taught me, where yes, you're right. The dips are bad and the anxiety happens and you think, where's this going? But to me, you have to build your sales pipeline. And that always gave me some comfort that this was going to be okay, that it was my job to create the pipeline. That said, I'm only one deal away from this thing working. And I've always had that mentality. And I lost a lot of those just one deals. We had some big deals working and they didn't work out. And I look back, I'm like, I'm really glad I didn't get that deal because there was another deal right around the corner. But don't rest on just the deals you have in your pipeline. You got to keep looking, keep hunting, keep hunting. It's a numbers game. I mean, all the books that you read and all the movies and all the motivation stuff, it just comes down to you got to keep hunting and pecking and find the right relationships. And that gave me comfort that it was going to work itself out because I'd have a spreadsheet and I'd look at who I've talked to, what deals we have going. Then I'd look at the value of those deals. So, okay, yeah, these may take a while, but it's all on paper versus just hoping that it happens. I made it happen. That's probably the difference. Than any. Being naive, right? Naive to think that, God, if I just get that one deal, it's all gonna then I've made it. I've made it. And then we lose the deal and like, well, shit, where's the next one to come from? Well, I already know where it's gonna come from because if I've got 30 deals in the pipeline, I should get my close rate should at least be 10% based on what I know. And that gave me a lot of reprieve to know that this thing was gonna work out. And as soon as I stop making those calls or building relationships, having meetings, and that's where the business would stop. And it'd take another 6 or 8 months to build the pipeline. So my energy was to keep it going, keep it going, keep it going, keep it going. And now I've hired somebody to do that for us, to make sure that we're literally 2 steps ahead and we're always thinking forward. right? Going back to the book title, we're leaping forward, thinking about tomorrow, not about yesterday. We lost that one. Forget about it. Get amnesia. Move forward. I was just down at the Mizzou football game this weekend. We barely beat Vanderbilt, which was not expected. Okay, guys, you're 4-0. Forget about it. Move on. That's yesterday. And I've sit here and I'm listening this morning, Sam. I'm listening to podcasts about that game and how horrible. And there's no way we're going to make it to the college football playoff. They may be right, but guess what? It doesn't matter because the next game is what matters, not what happened last week. And it's just amazing. Just in society, everybody tries to predict what happened yesterday is what's going to happen tomorrow, or success is going to happen going forward. It doesn't work that way. It's not linear. And if you understand that, you've got a lot of power because a lot of the naysayers are going to look back and say, well, that's the trend. Well, it really isn't because we don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. No one knows, but you can make it happen.
Right. You can make it happen. That's cool. So I think this has been a pretty successful podcast. It's funny too, because I guess with limited time, because you had a family and all that, and we didn't even fully quite get into that. You said, I remember you 5-year-old daughters. Is that about when did you first buy the business? How old were they, or were they around
So it was 2006. My
it?
oldest would have been 6 years old, and my youngest was 5 years old. And probably the other aspect when I think about things that helped. My wife, who was also in a small family business, understood she hadn't experienced the stuff that we were going through, but she saw her own parents experience that. So there was some empathy and giving me time to figure it out. Now, I sheltered a lot of that stuff from her. I sheltered a lot of the financial risk. I don't think she knew how bad was bad, if she really admitted it. But she, for some reason, always had faith that I'd figure it out. But the fact that she fundamentally kind of understood it, and she'd gone through the same emotions and saw her parents go through it growing up, I think just through osmosis, I think that helped our marriage and having some patience and reprieve that this thing just takes time. And without that, I probably got a lot more pressure. And she was working as well. I mean, to do all this and having a spouse stay at home. Holy cow, that would have been a deal killer, quite honestly. And you talk about, hedging a little bit. You just got to go back to, can you afford to do it? Can you live off of what you're currently making? Talking about somebody making the leap from that corporate job to being an entrepreneur, and I would say probably anticipate 2 or 3 years without much income. I think people think that, and that, hey, if you make it bigger, faster than that, great. That's a just plus. But you've got to really model that and understand what you can live on and what you can do. And that takes some of the pressure off a little bit and some of the stress. But I think you need a plan. I think a lot of people, it is good to be naive, but you need a financial plan. The financial plan is what I think creates a lot of the stress. Does that make sense at all? I mean, it's
It
weird. I
does
mean,
from the perspective of, so I think I'm a little bit more emotional than perhaps some folks. The reason I think this is because, well, and it's hard not to be emotional when you're the one involved. I'm certain you were too. But what's helped me is friends that'll come in and look at my situation, look at the financials
Oh,
in a
it's not
third,
so bad.
right? Like, no, not even it's not so bad. They'll like, oh, just do this and then that and then this and then that and then done. And I'm like, what did you just do? You just simplified, in some cases, an emotional nightmare into like a 1 + 1 = 2. Follow the formula, 1 + 1 = 2. And sometimes I think you definitely have to be that way. If you're not wired that way naturally, I think you just kind of have to work at getting to that point to where it's like, look, to your, like you said, this is the plan. We follow the plan and we
Yeah,
move
probably, and probably that we haven't even touched on
forward.
this. We go on and on, probably, and have an episode too. But and I've seen it in your own business. I think the next step then is adding staff and trying to scale your own business. is another big gut check,
Yeah.
because all you're doing when you hire, let's say you started as a sole entrepreneur, and I think you did.
Yep.
At one point, I bought an existing business or existing employees, but then I ratchet down to just myself out of necessity. You're now basically taking money out of your own pocket. Maybe you get to a point like, okay, I'm making a decent living, but I just have another job and I've got a lifestyle and I want this company to thrive. I love doing it, but I need a staff. If I'm going to grow, it can't all run through Sam. It can't all run through Pat. So I've got to add some layers, and there's those tipping points in your business. But what's frustrating is you then are going to go backwards again. So it's a step function,
Yep.
and that's hard to take. And you really got to be careful who you hire, because you hire the wrong person at that small company, it'll set you back in even further. If you have to invest in a 50 to 80 to whatever $1,000 person, holy cow, that's a big freaking step. And it takes a lot of gumption to say, I believe in myself, but then you've got to put more pressure on yourself to get more sales. Because then you have regret. You get pissed because you're out there selling just so this person can have a job, and they're not as grateful most of the times, and they're not understanding that I'm busting my butt just so you can have a paycheck. I was in a better position before you started. And having resolve and understanding the big picture, man, it's hard. It is really, really hard. And I still go through it today. Still
Yeah.
go through it today of, are we going to add somebody? If we do, I'm making another investment in the company, but if we do it, I just can't eat that mark. I got to go find maybe another $2 million in sales just to pay for that extra person. And I feel the pressure when we do that. And now I have a pressure to, I'm basically providing for other families as well and creating the culture and stuff. And that evolution of that next, I would call it phase two, may be harder than phase one. You're going through that now, I would assume, right?
Yeah, so with regards to growth phases, I would say so. I mean, we've to your point, there was a person in there brought on, let go, and yeah, that hurts, you know. And I had a buddy of mine who did like what was it? I think he did like a VA or something, or he caught it early on, and he was like, "Oh yeah, I just burned $1,000 or something like that." And I was like, "Try six, try, you know." And in your case, I'm sure you've seen even more, you know,
I
when
blow
you're.
through $40,000 or $50,000, and then I'm too nice. I'm scared to fire people because that sucks. And I've gotten over that a little bit. We've made some mistakes, and the last person was, I knew within the first 3 weeks, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is wrong. And for them and myself, I cut it off very, very quickly and just said that was a lesson learned, move on and fire somebody else. But or hire somebody else. But those 3 weeks, you invested in time, energy. In that case, it was probably $7,000 to $8,000 of their time. That's tough to take, especially when you're a small company. I mean, bigger companies can do this stuff all the time, and it's your own money. I mean, that's the thing. It is literally your own money that you're doing this with.
100%. So, are there any kind of parting words you'd want to leave as we start to wrap it up? Just thinking about what we've been talking about, your journey. If there was kind of one thing you wanted to bring to the surface for folks out there that maybe haven't taken the leap yet, or have, or in early on, or maybe they're
Well,
far along and they're just in another valley. I don't know.
yeah,
What's
I
something
think
you've
you,
learned?
I think you, A, I wouldn't do anything with partners ever again. Just wouldn't do it. It brings way too much complication. If you do, be very, very careful. And making sure you have complete control of what you're doing. And I really would go back to, I think most stress comes from the financial side. So you got to really understand what your bottom is and how you can live off of that bottom. And you have other resources to ensure that you can live off that for a while. And if the answer is yes, then go for it. And I think the kind of last piece is I feel like people So when I say that, I think people probably live above their means because they want to show that they're doing better than they are. And I think you need to check your ego at the door and just live off of what you have. And it's tough. I mean, I went through it, man. I watched, friends of ours, neighbors of ours that were all doing way better than I was. And I was still driving the car that had 240,000 miles on it and grinding through stuff. And everyone's getting new cars, new houses, all that stuff. And had a little bit of an imposter element going, man, I mean, I should be doing way better than I am at this age. But that also drove me to make sure I made it work, which is kind of odd. You can't give up too soon as well. Like I remember meeting with people. You had asked the question right at the beginning of this podcast of why did you keep going? And many people abort way too quick because they need the immediate gratification of success. And it just takes time. I mean, relationships are everything, and it takes time. I mean, I started this 18 years ago, or bought the company 18 years ago, Sam. I would say we weren't really having what I would call true success until probably 7 years ago. It was a 10 or 11 years of grind of just making enough where we put food on the table. The family was supported. Our girls would never recognize that today. They had no clue. It didn't fulfill. I had greater aspirations for myself, but those 11 years were the reason why we're having success the past 6 or 7. And I would say 90% of the people would have given up in year 5.
That's cool.
And some of that is the small pivots along the way. You could make the argument that I gave up on my own business model, and I did. I didn't give up working for myself, being an entrepreneur. I just found a different way to make money and build a brand. So you've got to be smart enough to make the adjustments. I talked about this in the book, and we talked a little bit about, football earlier. When you're in a game, you've got to make these adjustments during the game. So you went in with a plan. Look at the Chiefs last night. They went in with a plan, right? Guess what? Some of their plan wasn't working. They were playing horrible. And the best football teams make the adjustments during the game for the win. And business is I mean, it is the exact same way. You go in each day with a plan, and pretty much every day within an hour, that plan goes out the window. And you've got to make the adjustments and call the audibles. And the person that calls the best audibles probably wins the game the most. Same thing in business.
Wasn't it Mike Tyson said everybody's got a plan until they get punched in the face?
Yeah, that's right.
So, again, to remind everybody, the book is Leaping Forward by Patrick Phelan. And yeah, Pat, I love that you got to join me, and I appreciate you, and hope everybody has a great one.
Yeah, it's fun. Look forward to more Ground Zero Growth podcasts and getting more guests on, and I'll listen and hopefully learn from others as well.
Thank you. Hello, everybody. I wanted to thank you for listening to today's episode. It's such a blessing to be able to interview some such fantastic individuals. If you're interested in listening to more, we look to post every Thursday at 10 a.m. You can find us on YouTube, Amazon Music, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. Thanks so much. Have a blessed day.